Our lesson today out of the second chapter of the book of Exodus, where we left off last week speaking on how that Moses was content to dwell in the land of Midian, and how that he became married, and how that he also had a child. And we find that after this, the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel, they groaned in their bondage, and they cried and sighed unto God, and their cry came up unto God, and God heard their cry, and God remembered his covenant, and God had respect unto the children of Israel. Here we have these people, the Israelites, who were a covenant people, who were the seed of Abraham, in the land of Egypt, in bondage, in servitude, being slaves, being oppressed by the Egyptians. These Israelites, they did not observe anymore the truth that God had given unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and Jacob. They had departed from the living God. They served the idols in the lands of Egypt. They bowed before the gods of the Egyptians. And now while they were in Egypt, it had went well with them until the king seen that they were multiplying, and he changed the laws, and he brought these people in slavery, in servitude, under oppression. And God, in his infinite mercy, seen to it that these people were brought in this position. They were his covenant people. And now when they realized in what position they were in, they began to cry unto God. Before they were crying against the taskmasters, they were angry with them, but now they turned away from them and they began to cry to God. They began to sigh and to groan in the bondage that they were in. And if you will take particular notice, their cry came up unto God. And God heard their cry. And God remembered his covenant. And God looked upon the children of Israel. And God had respect unto them. You notice how many times the word of God comes forth in this particular two verses, my hearers? This is a token of the love and of the mercy and of the favor and the pity and the compassion that God had towards these people in the Israelites in Egypt. And my hearers, these people, the Israelites, are a type of the Church of Christ. The Church of Christ with all mankind are born in sin, and in through the deep fall in Adam, they are under the wrath and under the anger and under the indignation of God. And they serve sin just as every other creature does. They also are serving divers pleasures, and they are hateful and hating one another, and they are following the course of this world, which leads to destruction. And now they also are in bondage to Satan and to sin and to this world, but they realize it not. They serve these masters with pleasure, just like the Israelites did in Egypt until the king changed the laws. And now it pleases God in his infinite mercy to seek his church out. And he likewise brings home unto them his holy law. And when this law comes down into the heart of a sinner, then this sinner begins to realize that he has sinned against a God who is a God that must punish sin. And he has to do with God, and he has to do with sin. And this sinner begins to turn away from all sin. Or he fights against sin, against the world, against himself. And as he is struggling in this, my hearers, he is in bondage. Oh, what a bondage he's in, trying to do what is right, trying to obey God, trying to satisfy the law's demands. And now when this sinner, and in through so many repeated falls, trying to fight against sin and not overcoming it, finding it too powerful for him, oh, this sinner is brought down into bondage. At first he thought he could do it, but now realizing that he cannot, and he's under the power and under the dominion of sin and the law cursing him, this sinner, my hearers, he begins to cry unto God. To go back again, to serve the world, to serve sin, it's impossible. But to go forward, he knows not which way to go. And now he begins to cry in earnest and sincerity unto God, just like the Israelites. And they began to cry to God too. And their cry came up unto God. And now this poor sinner, whoever he may be, who is crying in this way, his cry or her cry comes up unto God. And they groan on account of sin. They groan because they can't serve God the way they like to. They groan because they doubt that God will ever hear them, that God will ever listen to their cry. They can't believe that their cry comes up unto God. They can't believe that God recognizes them, that he looks upon them. But my hearers, these people are a covenant people. God covenanted with his son Jesus in eternity for these people. And therefore, he who put the cry in the hearts of the Israelites also puts the cry in the hearts of his children. And they continue to cry unto him that he would deliver them. What do you think was the cry of the Israelites? Don't you think that they cried to God that he would deliver them from their enemies? They were too powerful for them. Oh, bring us out of this bondage. Bring us out of this slavery. Oh, bring us out of this land. Oh, remember us where thou hast promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that thou would lead us out of this land. Oh, do remember us. And what's the cry of a poor sinner, my hearers, in bondage? Same cry. Oh, do deliver me from my enemies, for they are too strong for me. Do deliver me from my sins. Do bring me out of my unbelief and out of my fears. Do save me, Lord. Do hear me. Do answer me. My hearers, have you any such cries? Has God ever put a cry into your heart? Oh, my hearers, if God has given you to cry unto him in this way, as I have just described feebly, then believe me, your cry comes up unto God. Did you ever cry before? Were you ever troubled before about sin? Were you ever feeling that you were in bondage, that you were a slave of Satan, sin in this world, and you couldn't deliver yourself out of it? My hearers, weren't you content to live in sin? Didn't you enjoy life? Didn't you go on in all the pleasures of this world? Moderately, morally, nobody could put a finger on you, but you'd still serve sin. But now what has taken place? God has put a cry into your heart. And now what are you doing? You're going alone. You're crying to God to be delivered from sin, from yourself, from Satan, from this world. But you probably say, I wonder whether my cry comes up unto God. I wonder whether he hears me. My hearers, did he hear the Israelites? He most certainly hears you. And he will in due time send you a mark deliverance, just as he delivered the children of Israel out of the hands of the Egyptians. and my hearers, and we find in the next chapter that Moses, he's taking care of his father-in-law's sheep, and he brings these sheep around the backside of the desert near the mountain of God called Horeb. Here we have Moses lawfully implied. What a different position he had from what he was when he was in Egypt. Here we find him taking care of the sheep of his father-in-law. God was teaching this man. What was he teaching him? Teaching him how he would soon lead Israel as a flock out of the land of Egypt. You know, my hearers, there isn't a meeker animal in the world than a sheep. And this is what Moses had to learn, meekness. Meekness is a wonderful grace. It's a grace that can bear all wrong and all evil against it and not be angry and not seek revenge upon the person who is bringing these things against you. You know, Moses, when he killed this Egyptian, there was not much sign of meekness in Moses. That was anger. That was pride. That was his own strength. But now we read in Numbers 11, and the man Moses was very meek, one of the meekest men upon the face of the earth. How did he become that way? He was taught this, taking care of the sheep of his father-in-law. And now he's going towards this mountain called Horeb. Now this mountain was part of the Mount Sinai. Horeb and Sinai are two mountains joined together. And now at this mountain it pleased God to reveal himself unto Moses in a burning bush. It was at this mountain that Moses struck the rock and brought water forth for the people. It was at this mountain likewise that Elijah fled to from the persecution of Jezebel. And now Moses, he's taking care of these sheep, and he sees in the distance a bush burning. It was all in flames, and he marveled at this sight, and he says, I will turn aside and see why that this bush is burning and is not consumed. We have here then a burning bush. Now this burning bush typifies in the first place the human nature of each and every one of us. We are corrupt creatures. We are filled with sin and iniquity. And it's a wonder that we are not consumed by the indignation and anger and wrath of God over us. It is because Jesus came in our flesh and took on our bodies that our bodies are still preserved. This bush also was a type of Israel. Israel was in the land of Egypt. Israel was under persecution. Israel was surrounded by enemies. She was in the iron furnace. And all the blowings of the enemies upon Israel could not destroy Israel. It remained in Egypt a people. This bush likewise, my hearers, is a type of the church of God throughout all ages. The church of God is surrounded likewise by enemies, outward enemies, but also inward enemies. Persecution, affliction is the lot of the church of Christ. And that it is not consumed, and that it remains upon earth and will remain to the day that Christ comes in the clouds, is due not to themselves, but to the power of God, who shall keep his church even if the gates of hell try to prevail against it. And now Moses, he turns aside to go to this bush. And as he turns aside, God sees him. And God speaks to him out of the midst of the bush. And calls unto him and says unto him, Moses, Moses, draw not nigh hither. Take thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. We see in this how that God knows each and every creature by name. He knew Moses. He called his name twice. He spake to him that he should not draw nigh hither, but that he should take his shoes from off his feet, for he was standing on holy ground. Now, this was customary under the Israelites when they worshiped God, that they took their shoes from off their feet. And my hearers, this teaches us when we come up to worship God that we should put away all ornaments of the flesh, that we should rid our minds of all filthy thoughts, sinful thoughts, worldly thoughts, and carnal thoughts. All that we should draw nigh in full assurance of faith, having our conscience sprinkled with the blood of Christ and our bodies washed with pure water, as the apostle says. All when we come up to worship God, my hearers, we are standing on holy ground. How few realize these important truths when we come up to worship God. My hearers, God spake unto Moses out of the midst of the bush, and God still speaks out of the midst of the bush, out of his church, out of his Zion, in which he will dwell. For this is his dwelling place forever. And he speaks unto those that come up to worship him. Moses here had a wonderful revelation of God given unto him. God speaking unto him out of the midst of this bush. And Moses, he hid his face because he was afraid to look upon God. Oh, my hearers, this teaches us that when God may meet with us in this life and give unto us an appearance of himself and into the medium of his word, then we likewise are on holy ground. The first appearance sometimes of God to a sinner causes that sinner to be filled with fear, to hide his face, because he fears God will bring his wrath and his anger upon him. But my hearers, God came to Moses, and he came to him with a purpose of sending him into the land of Egypt. And God likewise comes to his people and manifests himself unto them, and in through the medium of his word, that they likewise will receive an inheritance which he hath prepared for them from before the foundation of this world. Have you ever had a meeting with God, my hearers? It's a rare thing in these our days for any individual to meet with God. You don't meet too many who can tell you of such a meeting that they have had, that God spake to them, and that they were filled with fear, filled with awe, filled with reverence, as Moses was when God spake to him out of the midst of this bush. Oh, what a wonderful thing it is for a sinner to have a meeting with God in this life. It's a sign, it's a token that God loves you, that God is going to take you to himself when you come to die. My hearers, God speaks unto Moses and says unto him, I have surely heard and seen the affliction of my people Israel in the land of Egypt, and have seen how these taskmasters oppress them, and I know their sorrows. Come, I will send you unto Egypt to deliver my people out of this land and bring them into the land of Canaan, into the land of the Amorites and of the Hittites and of the Jebusites and so forth. Here we have God in his infinite mercy and love thinking upon these people, the Israelites. Take particular notice, he calls them my people. He had made choice of them, and therefore he had covenanted about them with Abraham, and he, after 400 years, remembers his word of promise. And now he's going to fulfill what he had told Abraham, that these people would dwell in this land of Canaan. And now God speaks unto Moses and says unto them, I have verily seen the affliction of my people Israel, and know their oppression, and have heard their sorrows. What a wonderful word, my hearers. I wonder if this word is applicable to anybody that's listening to me. I wish this would be made a word of God to some poor and mortal soul this afternoon. I have seen thy affliction, and I know thy oppression because of the taskmasters. Do you believe me that God sees you? That he knows your troubles, that he knows your affliction, and that he knows that this taskmaster, the law, standing over the top of you is giving you no rest? Do you believe that he knows your sorrows, that he sees how grieved you are because you cannot do what God commands you to do? Or could you but have faith to believe that he knows your afflictions, he sees your struggles under the law, and that he knows your sorrows, your grief, your weeping, your sighing, you're crying under all your troubles for sin and for iniquity. And now I am come down to deliver you, he says. Do you not wish that he would come down to deliver you? Who can deliver you but him? Who knows your case better than him? Oh, poor soul. May the Lord comfort you and through the medium of this text. Oh, believe that he knows your afflictions. Believe that there will be a time coming when he will deliver you from all your sorrows and all your griefs. The time came for Israel. The time comes for each spiritual Israelite who has been taught to groan, who has been taught to sigh unto the living God. And now he calls on Moses to go into the land of Egypt. And my hearers, and Moses, who had been so willing to go 40 years ago, when he went in his own strength, when he slew the Egyptian, and we find him here speaking unto God and saying, who am I that I should go unto the land of Egypt and unto Pharaoh and deliver these people? Ah, Moses, my hearers, he had been taught his weakness, his insufficiency. Ah, Moses, he felt, after 40 years being behind a sheep, that he would die being a shepherd. He had no more thought whatsoever of ever delivering the people of Israel. And this is the time when God comes, my hearers. And now God wanted Moses to go, and Moses, who am I, he says. You know, when he was educated, when he was brought up in all the learning of Egypt, oh, he felt capable to go. But after 40 years of being a shepherd and just learning to be but a meek character, not him, he wasn't going to go. I think he said right in his own heart, I'm not going to go. And now God speaks unto him and says unto him, where he said, who am I that I should go? God gives him a wonderful word, a word that touched me so. Certainly, I will be with you. It was to assure Moses that he would have the help and the guidance of that great and glorious God who appeared unto him and was speaking to him out of the midst of this fire. Certainly, I will be with you. Don't be afraid, Moses. Don't fear that you have to go up and do this work alone. Certainly, I will be with you. Oh, my hearers, how encouraging these words are to a person that feels like Moses did. Who am I? What am I? You ever feel that way? Insignificant, less than the least of all creatures. Now this is where meekness brings us. And this is where Moses was. Who am I, he says. He couldn't go, my hearers. But the Lord encouraged him and said he certainly would be with him. And that he would be with him when he went into the land of Egypt, and that this would be a sign and a token to him when he had led the people out, that they would worship God at this mountain. So, my hearers, God most certainly will be with each and every groaning and sighing sinner. Well, could you believe it, you say? Certainly, I will be with you. Can you believe God's with you? Everything seems to be against you. There's so many enemies outside, there's so many enemies inside. And sin, that strong enemy, which you can't overcome, and which you fear will be your ruin and your destruction. Now this blessed God in heaven above, he says, certainly, I will be with you, and I will keep you, and I will protect you whithersoever thou goest. Moses then is called by God. He has a divine call to go forth to lead the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt. And now Moses, he begins to argue with God. He says unto God, but when I go, and these people say unto me, who has sent you hither? And I say, the God of our fathers has sent me. And they say unto me, what is his name? What shall I say? He then saw before him trouble. He saw that it wasn't going to be an easy task to bring these people out of the land of Egypt. And therefore he questioned God. Well, what would he say to these people when he came with the message that God had appeared unto him and God was going to lead them out, if they said, well, what is his name? And then God answers him with these words, I am that I am. You go to the people of Israel and say, I am hath sent me unto you. All my hearers, I am that I am is a wonderful name. It reveals unto us the self-existence of God, the independency of God, the origin of all beings, except sin. This glorious Jehovah, the God who is faithful, who is unchangeable, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever, I am that I am. What a blessing that this God is what he is and remains what he is. Oh, if he wasn't I am that I am, it would be a lost matter for every soul here present. This I am was revealing his faithfulness to these people that were in the land of Egypt. They were